Hello, and welcome to another episode of Shipping and Handling. I am your host, Jennifer Udden.
And I'm your other host, Bridget Smith.
Welcome to 2015.
Yay! Also, welcome to iTunes!
Yay! And Libsyn. So
we're super excited to actually have this up.
It's like we're a real boy, girl, podcast. I feel like I've made that joke before, but it never stops being real for me, so...
Before we start going this week and talking about all of our usual nonsense, I would like to give a shout out to the person who sent us the wine that we're drinking tonight, who is Anna Shinoda, who is one of my boss's clients, and her debut YA novel came out last year. It's called Learning Not to Drown. It's from Simon & Schuster. And
that's a great title.
Isn't it?
Ooh.
And it's also, like, thematically apt in many different ways.
Ooh, I love it. I love it.
It's about a teenage girl whose beloved, adored older brother has been in and out of prison for basically her entire life. And so he comes back. He gets released again the summer before her senior year of high school. And it's all sort of about her figuring out the truth about him and coming to terms with that, and also carving out a place for herself in life when her whole family and the way everyone thinks about her all revolves around her troublesome older brother.
She's the girl with the brother in jail.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. I'm really going to check that out. Oh,
so
my God.
I
and the wine is delicious.
It.
So.
And yes, and Anna sent me 2 bottles of wine for Christmas, which was so nice of her, and I really appreciate. So we are drinking it tonight, and you should check out her book because it's great.
We're drinking only one of the bottles because we are responsible adults who are taking our duties to you very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is a new year, as we said, so there's a lot going to happen this year. I mean,
yes.
I know that last year we did a sort of, before everything completely derailed, we talked about, you know, what our sort of reading goals were for the year.
Yep.
I haven't really set any reading goals. I made a much less stupid challenge to myself on Goodreads, because last year I was like, I'm going to read 125 books, which was patently stupid. Like, I have no idea what I was thinking.
See, I am just, the past couple of years I've set 52 for myself on Goodreads, which is one per week, which should be totally manageable. And somehow around like October, it always just completely collapses. I always hit some book that I am not enjoying it all, but feel the need to finish for some reason. And so that book takes me like 3 weeks to finish, and then I'm completely off.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm going to keep setting it at 52 until I actually get there. I think last year I did 47 or 48. So I'm back trying for 52 this year, and I'm already one ahead.
Yes.
2 books so far this year.
Yes.
So,
I've read several, but 2 of them were incredibly short. One of which was our pal agent Connor Goldsmith's short book on plotting, which was very charming and very informative. It laid out in a very straightforward and interesting way how to plot a novel, which I thought was, I always try to read those kind of books so that I can have an idea of how writers are thinking about plotting.
Because and what they're being told.
What they're being told. And in this case, it was good advice. So I was like, oh, good. This wasn't a waste of time.
And on that vein, I would also like to recommend one of my favorite writer advice books, which is Second Sight by Cheryl Klein, which is about revision. And she's an editor at Scholastic, and she's very, very smart.
Yes.
And talks very... and her advice is really great, so I would definitely recommend checking that out.
Oh, that's so good, because I think that there's a lot of books that write to, you know, how to write a book, how to plot a novel, but the part that comes after is like
how do you fix the book?
Yes, how do you turn it from, as you said, a manuscript into a book? You know, those steps are a little bit less transparent.
Yes, and it's also really hard to give advice on because it varies so much from book to book. Like, it's hard to give advice on revising without having read the book and seeing the actual problems that it has.
Yeah.
But since Cheryl has revised so many, and she was the American editor or worked on the American versions of the Harry Potter books.
Ooh, neat.
So she also has a lot of experience and really knows how to get to the heart of common problems and that sort of thing. So,
oh, those books. I started rereading them over the holiday break. I went home to Texas, and we discovered that, you know, between the various members of my family who've read the book, so that's my sister, me, and my mom, we have, you know, we have one copy of like books 1 through 3, We have two copies of book two. For some reason, we only have one of book five. We have two of six, and we have three of seven.
Oh, dear.
Because by that time, we all wanted our own copy because we were all reading it at the same time.
Yeah, last year for either my birthday or for Christmas, I made my mom buy me like the package of ebooks.
Ooh.
So I could have it with me all the time.
I think I might treat myself to that later in the year. One of my reading resolutions is to actually obey my two out, one in purchasing books rule, because,
okay.
Which I might actually have to up to three out, one in, because I just went absolutely crazy over the Christmas holidays. I received a bunch of really wonderful books from family members, and including a Tom Hiddleston coloring book from my cousin Claire, which, thank you.
Really excellent choice there.
Priorities. Then, you know, there's wonderful bookstores in Houston. There's Brazos Books, which I went into and bought yet another book about World War One, and then I bought a bunch of books at Half Price Books, which is another great bookstore. So all in all, I shipped, I think, 15 books from Houston back to New York. It's like, yeah, I've got a problem. I've already read two of them.
Oh, good.
My dad gave me Men Explain Things to Me by Rebecca Solnit. Oh my God, it's so great. She wrote that wonderful essay about mansplaining.
Yeah.
And she writes in the afterword to it that she didn't invent the term, but she loves it, so she's gonna like take credit for it anyway. But so did you take a look at the stuff you read last year to see, the breakdown of how you? I mean, we talked a little bit sort of generally about it in the episode that aired just before. Do you love this, guys? Two episodes in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, like.
This is one of my resolutions. Is we're going to actually establish.
We're actually going to do this.
Yes,
I know we had to reschedule. We were going to record yesterday, but I was like, no, we have to do it this week. It has to go up on Thursday. We planned it.
Yes, and fortunately, we were able to reschedule.
Yes. High five us.
I did notice. Well, I talked about this in the last episode. Is that a lot of my the books that I really loved last year were adult novels and. I plan to read more adult novels as well this year. Mm-hmm. I think I did a good job reading more of them this past year. But the thing that I would like to work on, you were commenting, Jen, as I came in, that you did not read as many books by women as you would like to.
Then I did a little count, and I actually had read more than I thought. But I would say that I sort of failed in the diversity of my reading generally.
Yeah.
And that is something that I actually made a list of, like, the books I'm going to read, like, in order of the time I'm going to read them so that I can fix that. And it's one of those things where I read an article about, I think it was the woman who is the editor-in-chief or the deputy editor-in-chief of BuzzFeed,
mm-hmm.
where she's like, diversity isn't something that you can just sort of expect to happen if you're a person who has sort of been blinded by privilege, which, you know, I think it's fair to say that, like, that's something that I'm working against is my own sort of, you know, privilege blinkers. But she's like, you have to make an effort at it. You have to go outside the sort of arenas that you normally find books in.
Mm.
So the next book that I'm going to read after I finish the one that I'm on is going to be Ascension by Jacqueline Koyanagi, who I hope I pronounced her last name right. And it is a adult sci-fi novel with a black female protagonist, and it just sounds like baller. The first line of the description is, Alana Quick is the best damn sky surgeon in Heliodor City, but repairing starship engine barely pays the bills. I love that. So I'm excited to read that one next.
Yeah, I noticed that I read more books with non-white protagonists than were by non-white authors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that is something that I need to pay attention to. So actually right now I'm reading Spirits Abroad, which is a book of short stories, fantasy short stories, set in Malaysia by Zen Cho.
Oh, neat.
She just, it's very interesting. It's so far removed from any experiences that I have had and the mm-hmm. culture that I grew up with, but it feels so well realized. I'm sort of baffled by the way that this culture that I am suddenly immersed in works, but she also, you know, just assumes that you'll figure it out and just writes it the way that it is, and I love that.
You mean she trusts the reader?
Exactly. It's great.
If we ever have to change the name of our podcast, that's what I'm going to call it.
Trust
the fucking reader.
But I should also mention that this author, Zen Cho, she just sold her debut novel, which is, I believe, a Regency fantasy. to Ace Rock.
Neat!
With various... It has... I guess the main characters are Asian, and I think they live in London, so it's interesting, and it's a...
Cool.
Different, and it sounds really awesome.
Can't wait to check it out. I mean, yeah. any twist on a Regency is...
I love Regency fantasy anyway, so yes. I will absolutely read this
Well,
book.
Have you read my client Emma Newman's Split Worlds novels? Because they're Regency fantasy and they're amazing.
I haven't. I should do that. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
That's really my reading goal, is to, you know, really, you know, follow my plan to diversify my reading list, because it is really important. And, you know, even as an agent, like, you have to keep reading stuff that is different from the stuff you would normally seek out, because you never know, like, how your horizons will be broadened.
It's also
just a good idea, like, as a decent human being, like, thing to do.
I think the thing that I need to work on is... So many of the books that I have and that I read are books that fell into my lap in some way. They, I get so many free galley copies at BEA or from editors and that sort of thing. And so I do try to pay attention when I'm buying books to diversity, but most of the books that I have and that I read are just ones that I was given. And so it does, that shapes what I wind up reading, and in a way that I'm not paying attention to. So clearly I need to pay more attention to that.
I mean, it's amazing how many things, you know, I feel like we talk about this a lot, but it's amazing how many things, you know, we just don't think about. You know, there's sort of an automatic thing until, you know, someone brings it to your attention.
It's like, hey, did you know you were doing this? No, I didn't.
And most, and hopefully, like, if we're not assholes, you know, someone will point out, hey, you're doing this thing. And we'll be like, yes, I am doing that thing. Thank you for pointing out. And we won't, you know, pull a BEA and be like, well, we're just picking the best writers out there.
You know, these
four writers are just the best.
Yes. Yes.
Well, you know, bringing us to, you know, things we want to find in our query piles this year, is there something in particular that you're, you know, manuscript wish listing at the moment?
I am interested in more high fantasy, and, or at least second world fantasy, and it doesn't necessarily need to be, you know, the epic tropes, but something that's not necessarily our world. And high concept, realistic, contemporary YA. So I was tweeting about this yesterday. I found a post on Tumblr from our friend Christina McTighe's Tumblr. She posted something to Twitter, and I, like, clicked through and was reading through it. And it was about this teenage girl who posted something on, I think it was like Yahoo Answers. And I was like, oh, dear, we need to find you, your people.
Bless.
But she posted, she was talking about how she went to this extremely strict private Catholic school, and they had passed out a list of banned books. And it was just, like, absurd things. It included things like the Canterbury Tales. And I was like, oh, okay.
To be fair, there's some dirty shit in those books.
Yes, but also I'm not sure.
You know, it's all in Old English, so you have to, like, which one of these words means penis? I'm not entirely sure.
You need a dictionary to make it out there.
Dictionary.
Oh, dear.
Sorry, I spent a lot of time with my dad, who makes some really excellent puns, so... I'm gonna be working this out of my system for a while.
But so she posted about how she brought in The Catcher in the Rye or something, which is one of her favorite books, and just to see if she'd get in trouble. And she got into a little bit of trouble for it, but not enough to, like, make it really bad. And then one of her classmates asked if he could borrow the book, and she was like, well, yes, obviously. One thing led to another, and it turns out she has started running a library of banned books out of the locker next to hers.
Oh my god, I love that.
I absolutely love this girl, and also would like to see the YA novel that's about this girl who's running this banned book emporium.
Didn't you call it, like, an anarchist banned book emporium? Yeah,
well, the thing that everyone on Tumblr was calling it was anarchist librarian kid.
Also awesome.
Yes. So that's the sort of thing where it's extremely high concept. It's like, teenage girl runs library of banned books in her high school, and that's and then it's all about her and her relationships with other people, and there's obviously a little bit of a romance in there as well, and obviously she's gonna get caught and get in trouble for it. And so, and I was thinking, it's sort of like the disreputable history of Frankie Landau Banks meets Frindle.
I am down with this combination so much.
So the other high concept ones was one that I sold this year, which was, it's a middle grade, but it's the only boy at an all-girls school tries to get kicked out. And so it's a premise that can be summed up in one sentence and is extremely catchy and makes you immediately intrigued, but then the book is about characters and relationships and the way that people deal with everyday life.
Yeah.
So that's what I'd love to see more of.
You know, I haven't really given a whole lot of thought to sort of my manuscript wish list as that goes. But, you know, I have been thinking a lot about, you know, the kinds of things I would like to see and, you know, the kinds of stories I would like to see. And I really would love an awesome friendship story. And I think that that applies across all the genres I represent.
Yep.
So science fiction, friendship story, fantasy, mm-hmm. friendship story, young adult, friendship story, fantasy or contemporary. You know, I could, because I really just, I realized I was talking to my sister at some point towards the end of last year. I was like, oh, I have no social life. And she's like, you have a really intense social life because you have a million friends that you love and you see all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I do. I do have a lot of friends that I love and I try
right?
to see
it's
as much
great.
As I can. And, you know, I don't think of it as a social life because I'm conditioned as a woman to think that I don't have a social life if I'm not dating, which everyone in publishing is a woman, which is awesome if you're into women, but I'm not. So it's like, ugh.
And this, but in this case, it makes you lots of friends.
I have wonderful friendships. I have
it's great.
So many, you know, lady bros that it is. It is amazing.
Yeah, that's something I want more of, too, is just lots more friendship stories. I would love more stories that really get into the deep connections between girls. I'm also really interested in that for boys, because that's something I can never have, so it's, like, fascinating.
Yes, and even, you know, and because a lot of my friends were guys growing up, like, in middle school, my best friends were guys. So, you know, that sort of like, you know, my best friend is a guy, I'm a girl, you know, kind of friendship. Like, I also would like to see that. So that's really the sort of only unifying theme in my things I would like to see list at the moment.
Incidentally, this is an extremely specific wish, but I thought of it. And
you have to put what you want to see out into the world, and the universe will bring it back, Bridget.
And I think I tweeted it at night, so it may have been missed. But I, an LGBT middle grade, but... The thing that I really want is about that first thing. You know how probably half the girls in the world have the story of their first boyfriend and how he was later figured out that he was gay?
Yeah.
everyone has this story or has friends who have this story. And so I really want to see something about that relationship of when you have this really intense bond with a friend and it becomes sort of romantic, even though it's not equally romantic on both sides, and about sort of the process of
figuring
out that they're not actually interested romantically in the other party and how that affects both of them and all of those relationships end in the two people being friends. That never ends tragically. So I think that would be a really interesting, there's a lot of room to explore in that book.
Ooh,
so I'd
awesome.
Love to see that.
Nice.
Yeah.
High five, girl. Ooh. High five. Well, there's also some books. I have to take a minute to plug some books of mine that are coming out this year.
Yes, of course.
In just 7 days, my client Lisa Nicholas's debut romance will be released called The Farther I Fall. It's out from Berkeley Intermix. It's amazing.
Awesome.
It's so hot. Oh, my God. Oh. It's about a woman who is sort of invalided home from the war, from Afghanistan, and she gets a job as the sort of tour manager for this wayward, just out of rehab rock star. And it's so, oh my God, it's so amazing. It's one of my favorite books I've worked on. So I'm sure I'll talk about this more later in the year, but Emma Newman's new novel, Planetfall, is coming out from Ace Rock in, I believe, November, but I could be wrong, so let me check. But it is, I've described it in the pitch as a sort of small town psychological novel in space.
Cool.
You know, one of those small towns where everyone knows your name and everyone knows your secrets and, you know, how do you hide something from everyone else?
Which makes...
if
so
you're
much
the only
that
people
that would...
for 3 million miles.
Yeah, that would make so much sense that that would... that same atmosphere would translate to a spaceship because
it's not even a spaceship. It's a colony on a planet. And, you know, they've established this colony. They've been there for a long time and they're the only people on this planet. And then one day this dude just like walks out of the desert and he's like, hi.
Oh god.
And everyone's like, fuck.
Where did you come from?
Where did you come from? And the main character has sort of been keeping all these secrets for the colony, and even secrets from herself. And it's one of my, this is another one, I know I say this a lot, but it's one of my favorite things I've ever worked on. And I remember when she pitched it, I was like, how is that going to work? And she's like, this is how it's going to work. And I was like, write this immediately. It's amazing.
Yeah, I can't wait to read that one.
I'm excited. And someday we'll be able to share the cover, which is just beautiful. So,
Well, since we are talking about things coming out in the second half of the year, I am extremely excited about my client, Emma. Emma Mills, whose debut novel comes out in the fall at some point.
This is the Pride and Prejudice football novel.
Pride and Prejudice meets Friday Night Lights. Yes.
Oh, I love it. I love it so much.
And I'm so, so excited to share this book with everyone because it's just so charming.
And I'll give up my copy of Darker Shade of Magic if you give me an arc of that. It's actually not my copy. It was given to me, and I haven't read it yet.
It was supposed to be passed around. Given to you two months ago.
Sorry, I'm the worst.
This is the shit or get off the pot situation, Jen. Come on.
Okay, fine. Fine.
Yeah, there are a lot of books coming out this year. Obviously, there are a lot of books that come out every year.
I know. Whenever anyone's like, I don't have anything to read, I'm like, but how?
Have you seen how many books there are in the world?
But why? But what do you do?
Yeah, yesterday, IO9 released their list of most anticipated SFF novels of 2015, and I kept opening it and looking at it and then getting overwhelmed and closing the tab, and then someone else would tweet about it and I'd open it and look at it and get overwhelmed and close the tab. There are so many on there, and a lot of them were even debuts or were books from authors that I haven't really heard of, and I was like, this is clearly something.
IO9 really does the Lord's work and sort of like, you know, the secular Lord's work and you know, in collecting, they have their finger on a lot of pulses, which I find awesome.
IO9 did not include this novel, and so I don't know why, I don't understand, but it's a debut fantasy by my friend Seth Dickinson, called The Trader Barrow Cormorant.
Oh, that title's so good.
Right? Ah. And I read this book on submission. I met him at a party and talked him into sending his book to me. And
strong
arm did. And it's fucking amazing.
Spoiler alert, he did not sign with you.
Nope. He signed with your agency.
Not with me, with Jen Jackson, our vice president, who's amazing.
And has a much more impressive track record than I do.
I know,
so
whenever she gets someone, I'm like, that's fair.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Okay.
It's cool.
I get it.
Not jealous. It's awesome. You're cool.
Totally fine.
I love all your authors.
Yeah.
Carry on.
So I still think this book is just absolutely incredible. I'm fairly certain it's at least going to be nominated for the Hugo. And so it's getting some very, very early buzz. People like Cameron Hurley read it, and she absolutely loved it and was raving about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's also one that I'm excited about. Even though I've already read it, I'm very excited for it to come out.
I think that's one of the things I like about publishing these days is, you know, I always hear about these feuds of, like, you know, so-and-so would never read so-and-so's book because they had, you know, punched each other at a Hugo party once. But I feel like, you know, and this is, to be fair, you know, from a quite limited circle of the people that I know and interact with on a daily basis, you know, people seem to be generally very excited. And it's like, yeah, I didn't get to represent you, but I'm so fucking excited. For example, if you're looking for a really awesome sort of semi-contemporary YA, an author named Katie Coyle has a book that just came out in the U.S., called, I think it's called, in the U.S. it's called something like Vivian Apple at the End of the Universe or something, or at the End of the World.
At the End of the World, yes.
Yeah, Vivian Apple at the End of the World. And I read it when she was on submission. She signed with someone else, but I was just like, I love this book. It's so great. And she had already had, she had won a contest in the U.K. to have it published. And it's just one of those books that you read and you're just like, this is just marvelous.
I read it.
It's about a girl whose parents join, not really a cult, but sort of this, like,
it's a rapture cult.
It's kind of a rapture cult, but it's really big, so it's not really a cult.
Yeah.
And she doesn't really believe in it. And so the night of the supposed apocalypse, she goes to a party instead of staying home with her parents. And when she comes home the next morning, her parents are gone and there's two holes in the roof.
Yeah.
I was just like, this is so great.
Yeah, I read it a couple months ago, and it's super hard to categorize because it's not, like, dystopian, and it's not contemporary, and it's sort of like...
It feels very contemporary, though.
It's sort of like it's our world extrapolated to be a little worse is sort of mm-hmm. how it is.
Yeah.
And so I think it's the sort of thing that would have a hard time finding its audience if it weren't YA, because I don't know how they would categorize it in adult, where genre is a lot more firmly defined.
Yeah, I mean, it made me think of a little bit of a, and this is not a slight, mm-hmm. a less literary, Kevin Brockmeyer's Brief History of the Dead,
okay.
which is a book that I think I am the only one among my acquaintance have read.
Yes, I have not.
But, you know, that was a very literary novel about a city that exists that is populated by the dead, and as long as there is someone on Earth who remembers them, they're in this city.
Okay.
So, like, historical figures hang around forever.
Cool.
Because people sort of remember them. But it's told from two points of view, you know, the sort of dwindling population of the city, and then the what sort of slowly becomes the last woman on Earth.
Oh, wow.
And it's just like, oh my God. It's, like, so heartbreaking. But it sort of reminded me of that, and which is a completely uncategorizable novel.
Yeah.
It's like, this is really fantasy, but because it's, like, literary fiction, it's, like, in the literary shelf. But yeah, I mean, that's an example of, like, I mean, I feel like the new publishing is like, I'm really excited about your book, even though I didn't get to work on it, or I lost out on it, or, you know.
It is a lot more fun if you can continue to like people even after you don't get to work with them professionally.
Yeah. I really wanted that, but you're awesome,
fine.
Awesome,
okay.
Cool.
Yeah, no, after I did not get that book, I spent about a week walking around banging my head on things. It's like, it's gonna be such a big deal.
But now you're friends with them, so that's
almost
more awesome, you know. It's like, hey, now we get to hang out.
Yeah.
And
we don't have to worry about, like,
and you don't have to ask me awkward questions about money or my contract.
Yeah.
So
nope. Don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. Well, I want to put a brief plug in for the other book that I'm very excited to read, which is Brian Staveley's The Providence of Fire. It's a sequel to The Emperor's Blades, which is one of my favorite fantasies of last year.
I have a copy of it and I haven't read it
yet. Read it. It's so good.
It's on my giant pile of things.
Oh my God, stop.
Read.
It's so good. So let's go to our various smartphones and see if there's any questions that we want answered.
Lots of people talking about bacon.
Lots of people talking about bacon, which, you know, so we have two slightly silly questions. Ryan Britt of the sometime guest on the podcast asks, should Lena Dunham have a cameo in The Force Awakens? Sure.
Why not?
The movie's going to be fucking bananas, so.
And we have absolutely no power over it, so.
So why not? And then my friend Meg asks, how can I incorporate more bacon and wine into my life?
Well,
step one,
start a podcast.
Step two, make being slightly tipsy one of the attractions.
Yes.
Step three, repeat ad infinitum.
Cheers. Yeah, it turns out shipping and handling pairs very well with cooking dinner with wine, is what I've heard.
Yes. And as for bacon, you know, watch your cholesterol, but, you know, if you ever find an opportunity to just have some bacon, just
a good BLT is a good balance. Mm-hmm. It's got the protein, it's got some substance, it's got some vegetables, you know.
Except I'm one of the weird people that doesn't like tomatoes, so my mom's like, who are you? You're from the South. Like, what is wrong with you? And I'm like, I just don't like them.
That's fair.
I like no, fair. It's the texture. It's, I don't know. But so I just have a BL.
Oh, that sounds so sad.
I know. It is sad. So Tracy Townsend asks, does center-cut bacon pair better with genre or literary fiction, do you think?
In keeping with the bacon theme.
I would say literary fiction, because center-cut bacon, to me, evokes, like, artisanal. I mean, I buy, like, the cheapest bacon there is.
I buy it when it's on sale.
You know, I mean, when I buy bacon, which is not often, I buy the cheapest bacon there is. So it's not, like, center-cut. It's like the ShopRite. It's the ShopRite brand. Like, let's be real. So I would say, you know, literary fiction, you know, quality, expensive hardcovers, expensive bacon, it seems to work.
Expensive wine
that we didn't pay for. Woo! Gift wine, best wine.
Yes. Same with gift chocolate, best chocolate.
I got so much chocolate for Christmas, I'm still working on it. It took, like, superhuman powers of self-restraint not to eat every single piece of chocolate the minute it arrived in my office. I would have gotten diabetes. Like, immediately.
Fast onset.
I mean, really, it would have been bad. So that would be my vote for
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
Although you could also say that since center cut bacon is sort of like more robust and like tastier, that science fiction or like genre fiction is center cut bacon because it has more layers, because it has to appeal on many levels.
Yes. And it's also immediately appealing.
Immediately appealing, yes.
Doesn't take very much. No, I mean, no one has to sell you on bacon. They can just say.
I'm trying to remember if I've ever met anyone who doesn't like bacon.
Well,
I can't eat it for like health or religious reasons.
Well,
which are legitimate and should not be.
Yes.
Naysayed.
No, for a long time I have come around to bacon, but for a long time I didn't like it at all. But every time it was made, I was like, oh, it smells so good and it's right there, and I'd take it and I'd eat it and I'd say, I don't like bacon at all.
Oh my god.
So I have since been convinced. I just kept trying it. I acquired the taste of bacon.
I mean, they keep saying that you can acquire the taste of olives, but I'm just like, but why?
Why
would you want to?
I understand alcohol and coffee as acquired tastes because they have effects other than their taste that you might want to acquire. But olives, I just don't understand. Like, why would I eat them if I don't like them? Why is that a thing that you keep doing?
To be fair, the list of stuff I don't like eating is like pretty long. So,
including tomatoes.
Tomatoes and like most melons. It's something about the texture.
Melons are like weirdly mushy. I get it.
And actually, olives, like, I don't mind sometimes, but it has to be like very small amounts and I have to know that they're there. There is nothing I hate more than a surprise olive. Like, no! Oh! There's olives in this!
Curses!
Because I feel like even if you leave tomato off the list, if you eat it, it's like, okay, not the end of the world.
Yeah.
But, like, the olives have such a strong...
strong flavor. Bitter taste. So
we've talked about olives for, like, a really long time, but we're still under time, so we're good.
To tie it in, is there anything like olives that you hate in fiction, where if you don't know about it going in, it just shocks you and you're like, you hate it?
Oh, surprise... unrelated rape scenes.
That was probably what I was going to answer as well.
You know, I understand the value of
a story about rape.
Too often when I encounter, like, in situations like this where I'm like, okay, this, we're ticking along and I've got this female character, and all of a sudden, like, out of nowhere, and for no story reasons, because, like, as we know, rape happens out of nowhere when you least expect it and when you don't want it to happen all the time.
Yes.
So
that is sort of how the definition of
any time that you like want it to happen, but like, you know, that's sort of the definition, but where it doesn't serve any purpose in the plot.
Yeah.
And it's just like, I need to make this character feel sad. I know. How about a harrowing sexual assault?
Yes. And because that, as we know, is the only thing that makes women feel sad or distressed in any way.
The only thing.
There's nothing else that
there's
you could possibly
use. Well, we don't have interior lives, so.
It's true. We have no feelings.
We have no feelings.
We only have the violation of our bodies.
Yay. I'm really depressed now. Thank you, Bridget.
Well, I also agree, but it was also strange venturing more into the SFF world to discover how
the
much...
The SFF adult world.
Yes. To discover how much of a trope that was, because I had mostly read books that were targeted at teenagers, where no one is idly raped, is threatened with rape. Yeah. It's a story about rape, or it doesn't happen in YA. Or I'd read a lot of fantasy by female authors, where they just don't really use that as just a thing.
Female authors not using rape as a casual trope. I mean, there were some very popular books last year that I was just like, the casual rapiness of this made me stop reading.
Yeah.
I was just like, I can't, like, I don't like this book enough to continue with this as a subplot.
Yeah.
And not even a subplot, just like a casual thing that was mentioned.
A fact
and then,
of the world.
And then discarded. And I'm just like, if this is the, I mean, because like, you know, I'm so tired of that. It's like, oh, well, it's just a fact. Like, it happens. I'm like, really?
But how about we envision a world where it doesn't happen to all women, or many women.
Or like so much you just expect it as like a side effect of being involved in a particular activity.
Yeah. As a side effect of being a woman who does things.
I'm a woman who does things. I watched I tried to watch the Golden Globes, but couldn't because I don't have cable. And my various semi-legal ways of watching it did not work.
They failed.
But in the monologue, Amy Poehler was like, you know, I didn't like Gone Girl because, you know, I go to the movies to escape. I don't want to see myself up on the screen. And I was just like, yes! I love what that says about you.
Yes.
You murdering psychopath. Spoiler alert for Gone Girl, the most popular book of last year, I guess. But
I love Amy Poehler.
I actually, I mean, to be fair, I did not watch any of the Kim Jong-il bits. Because I was like, I do not feel I am qualified.
Yes. And, you know, Margaret Cho was like, yeah, I did it.
And I mean, I read an article on New York Magazine today that said, like, you know, even if Margaret Cho says it's, you know, okay, it still, like, relies on, like, terrible humor. I'm like, well, you know, I feel like if someone is actually, like, ethnically Korean and their family has been affected, like, they are allowed to be, you know, they are allowed to make jokes about this situation in any way that they feel is appropriate. Yes. Because we have no say.
I am not going to object if she felt that was the best way to express frustration or anger.
Yeah.
If that works for her, then great.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's one of the most frustrating things about the interview situation for me is that I was just like, I really hate that, like, for freedom of speech, I'm supposed to defend this.
Yes. Right?
Like, I think they even talked about it everyone pretended that they wanted to see the interview. And it's like, yeah, I did not want to see the interview. When they announced it, I was like, that sounds deeply unfunny.
Yes.
Like, on every level, that just sounds terrible.
So, rape the olives casual of the fiction world.
The olives of the fiction world for those who hate olives, which is me.
Some people like olives, so I guess for them it would be something different.
Alrighty. So I think that might be...
Oh, I should also mention... I guess it's too late now, but Tracy Townsend is my client, so.
Oh, I didn't know
she
that.
Was the one who
way to bury the fucking league.
Sorry,
lead. Oh my god.
La, la, la.
Jen and Bridget do a podcast. That's sad. We've each had less. We've had a glass and a half of wine, and this is devolving very quickly.
Rapidly.
We should also say that Justin of Staffers Book Reviews asks.
Of the Rocket Talk podcast.
Yes, the Rocket Talk podcast. We should do a crossover with that.
We should.
Let us know if you'd be interested in that. And if there's anything that you'd ever be interested in us talking about, as always, let us know.
Yes, we are open to suggestions.
He says, yeah, so I have a lot of wacky ideas and no desire to write them. How do I get an agent? And, We gave him some really excellent suggestions,
yes,
I feel.
Absolutely.
So.
I think I...
Terry Goodkind is on the phone, ready to take your call, Justin.
Well, he and I yesterday were talking about...
and Justin, not you and Terry Goodkind.
Right, yes.
It must
Justin
be said.
And I were talking about his... he made a joke about crossing over his two greatest passions, golf and fantasy novels, to have an urban fantasy about golf. No, we ultimately started talking about it, and I was like, actually, that sounds like country club fantasy. And he was like, you know, an sort of urban fantasy plot structure, but in the country club milieu, where it's, you know, these fairly well-off
okay,
people.
When you say it that way, that is awesome.
Right?
I am a person who does not understand golf. I have many family members who love it and play it all the time.
I, like, come from a golfing family, but was never taught it, and I'm like, why?
I do not. It has not ever been one of the sports that I, like, understand. I know that people love it, and I say, God bless.
Have fun. I know that people have no understanding of fencing, so, you know, fair. But it would also be interesting, golf as a system of magic is also kind of an interesting thing.
Ooh.
I don't know how that would work and not be incredibly boring, but the repetition and the ritual of golf and the way you do sort of the same thing on every hole but differently, and there's skill involved.
Well, and also sort of the physicality angle of it. I mean, it reminds me of this Nigerian short film called Pumzi, which was about a world without water, but it was African. It was in Nigeria, and they're in the desert, and they're underground. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't really know that they're in the desert because it's underground for most of the time. But the power in the this sort of little colony is provided by people, like, on bicycles and, like, and on, like, workout equipment.
Interesting.
And that's how, like, people sort of, like, generate power. And the sort of the physicality of, like, production. And, like, I mean, that's the science fiction angle, but, you know, in in magic as well, I'm always fascinated by, like, you know, yes. the physical toll that magic takes
I
and stuff like that.
I am absolutely fascinated by that, because you need to have some sort of effect. Magic needs to have some cost, or else it just solves problems and it has nothing. It needs to have limitations and it needs to have a cost, and mm-hmm. in that case, and if it's a physical toll, I'm generally very fascinated by that.
Yeah.
So golf as a system of magic could be incredibly boring, or it could be really cool.
Well, I think, you know, you said country club fantasy, and now I'm thinking of A Little Night Music, and now I'm thinking of, like, a fantasy Little Night Music. Can you imagine, like, there's all these, like, rich Swedish people in the country, like, having affairs, and then, like, fucking
also
Cthulhu
magic.
Invades, like, you know?
Or even Mary Robinette Kowal.
Well, yes, she's sort of in a class of her own, and
yes.
like, those books are, if you have not checked out Shades of Milk and Honey and her other books, she is just absolutely phenomenal. And
it's Jane Austen with magic, and it's the same sort of domestic, small scale magic that you would expect from a Jane Austen novel, and it's, I love it for that.
You know, I love that, you know, that glamours is, you know, it's a form of magic that ladies learn as like
along
a way
with
of being
piano and
as
painting.
Like a way of being accomplished. I'm just like, yes. I love that so much. Well, I think we are reaching, you know, the end of our time. Or is there anything
so.
You mentioned that you were reading? Can you tell us the title of that book again?
Spirits Abroad by Zen Cho.
Spirits Abroad, cool.
It's published by some small time publisher. I think they're based in Malaysia. Which, you know, is understandable because it's a book of fantasy short stories set in Malaysia.
I once read a collection of Tamil pulp fiction.
Oh, wow.
Published by, like, a German publishing house. It was really good. It was amazing.
That sounds really cool.
It was really amazing. It was just fabulous. It was called Tamil Pulp Fiction Volume 1, I think.
Nice.
But,
yeah, it really gets the point across.
Yeah, but it was, like, you know, the most random place you would expect it to be published.
Yeah. So, you know, Malaysian small press makes a lot of sense for this book.
Yes.
So it's available on Amazon. So if you're interested, take a look. I'm fairly certain her book sold at auction. So I think it's probably going to be a big deal. So
cool. We love to hear that.
Read her early stuff and then you can say you knew her before she was cool.
You can be the hipster. The hipster, knower of Malaysian short fiction.
Yes. Well, what are you reading, Jen?
Well, I'm about to start reading Ascension.
Okay.
And I'm finished. I'm sort of dipping into this nonfiction book that I had started before. I think I started it in early December or late November.
Okay.
And it is a book about Prussia.
Yay!
because of my sort of a friend of mine did not know that I had my, like, World War One obsession, and she went to Barnes & Noble with me before Christmas as I was buying Christmas gifts for people, and I was like, oh, I'm going to take a look through the history section. It's like, oh, I've read that. And she's like, I did not know this about you. I kind of thought that you just sat around reading porn and sci-fi all day. And I was like, well, that's not entirely inaccurate.
It's about
but
a third porn, about a third sci-fi, and a third World War One history.
World War One. But, you know, I'm trying to expand my sights beyond sort of Britain, France, United States.
I would be interested in World War One fantasy. Just putting that out there into the universe, like The Secret.
Dibs. I'm going to put that out there harder because I want it more.
I'm always fascinated. Well, have you read Scott Westerfeld's World War One?
No, I've read books? The other one, his other series.
The Uglies.
Yeah.
The Leviathan. Oh, I can't remember.
I think I own Leviathan, but have not read it.
They're super cool.
They're good? Okay.
Yeah. I like them a lot more than Uglies. Which, I liked Uglies, but I read it after I'd read a number of other dystopian books, and so it didn't feel quite as fresh as it probably did when it was published. And I was also extremely frustrated by the fact that the main character had a different personality in every book.
Yeah.
It's like, why am I invested in character growth?
Well, if I'm going to talk about,
Leviathan's great.
If I'm going to express a preference, I would actually say post-World War One, like, Weimar fantasy.
Okay.
I would like to see that. Sort of like the world between the wars, everything is terrible.
Mm.
And not like the Roaring Twenties, because that's kind of like, we've seen
that's
that kind
thing.
Of, but
yeah.
like the tens and like the thirties.
Mm.
That's what I would like to see.
Yeah. Depression era fantasy.
Depression era fantasy.
Super interesting.
Yeah.
Dust Bowl fantasy. I would read that.
I would also read Dust Bowl fantasy. Yeah. What are they? The Hoover towns, the shanty towns in Great Depression. What were
they? Oh, I'm not sure. I just remember reading a, they actually used this in Interstellar, which I thought was really funny. I was elbowing the person I went with and being like, look,
I haven't seen Interstellar. Does that mean I'm a bad person?
Well,
I kind of heard some things about it that made me sort of be like, oh no.
I liked it.
Okay.
It was, I could watch it and understand why people didn't like it, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was, and it's, if you like space opera, 3/4 of it is a really awesome space opera.
I do love space
opera.
The
end, it gets a little bit weird, but,
well, it always gets weird in Chris Nolan movies. Yes. It's like, pay no attention to this over here, we're just gonna end it here, yes.
Yeah. I heard a couple people complaining that it was completely incomprehensible if you weren't a physicist, and I was like, I thought they explained it very clearly multiple times.
He's really into exposition. Yeah. Like, Inception could have been called Exposition, and it would have completely worked. But,
The thing I was going to say, though, is I remember reading a book, or it may have actually been an audiobook, when I was young, about the Dust Bowl, where there was so much dust. This book was set in Oklahoma, and there was so much dust everywhere that when they set the table for dinner, they had to put the plates upside down so that the dust didn't settle onto the eating surfaces of the plates. And so then when the time came to serve the food, they'd flip it over and put the food on the plates really fast and eat it quickly before the dust could settle on it. And that is a small factoid that has stuck with me ever since I heard this when I was very young. And so that's one of the things that I always want to see come up. And they did that in Interstellar. They're, the parts that are set on Earth, basically Earth has been destroyed.
Yeah.
And it's a dust bowl, and so you see them setting the table with the plates upside down, and it's like, oh my god, this thing, I love this thing.
I love it when weird historical shit that you learned in a dumb way when you were a child comes back, and you're like, ah, that thing, yes! Awesome. Cool, well, on that note, I think we can end, but,
yes.
As always, thank you for listening, and, you know, you can always leave suggestions, questions, and comments in a variety of locales. Our Twitter handle is shipandhandling, @shipandhandling.
Mm-hmm.
Our email address is shippingandhandlingpodcast@gmail.com, and you can find our ask box on our website, which is shippingandhandlingpodcast.com/ask. And as always, thank you for listening, and see you in a couple weeks.
We appreciate you being here and hope you've enjoyed it.
Yes. Bye. Bye.